Floor King.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, welcome indeed. It's 8 minutes after 9 o'clock, and we're underway on AM 1420, The Answer. It's Tuesday, the 30th and final morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024. And it's a chaotic morning, to say the very least. They are ratcheting it up. They are smashing windows. They're taking over buildings. They're declaring halls to be no-go zones. And I'm talking about the radical, professional, paid agitators and the brainwashed college students across American campuses that are following them and working alongside them. It is a very, very precarious point at which we find ourselves right now. This is going on from coast to coast. Hundreds of campuses, dozens in the very, very severe violent stage where violence and vandalism have already begun, or they are, again, teetering on the brink here of exactly that. And in respect of the situation, we are going to forego today's Top 9 at 9. And I kind of asked you a couple of days ago whether you wanted to keep doing that or you wanted to if you wanted me to do the monologue version of the show at the top of the show, and most people said keep the top 9 at 9. So I'm not wavering on that, but just today. I woke up this morning the same way I went to bed, watching the chaos, watching it grow, watching it expand. And I decided I needed to spend more time on this today rather than just making it one of the top 9 stories. It is going to be the top story, and Peter Kersenow is just champing at the bit, and he's going to join us at 10:10 to talk about this. He's got a lot of important information to share and views, observations, analyses. That'll be at 10:10, and then at 11:10, we're going to talk about this will tie, believe it or not. I scheduled Ira Melman, or actually I asked Nugget to schedule Ira Melman for today. Ira Melman, of course, with the FAIR, Federation for American Immigration Reform, about this story about Biden using parole in place to grant backdoor amnesty to more than a million illegal aliens. The border still matters. While everybody's watching the campuses, nobody's watching the border, except for those who are, that are taking video of just outright invasions. More massive hordes of people, not just little by little, but the caravans we have watched over the last few years, just continuing to pour across the border. And Biden is now taking steps to grant backdoor amnesty to more than a million of them. So I said, let's talk to Ira Melman. This is yesterday. I asked Nugget to do this before we started the, before I kind of got a real sense of how bad and how devolving, if you will, the situations were on campus. And we were going to do this all day today. So I'm going to tie it, though. And the reason why is because radical leftists want to use our southern border and want to bring in illegal aliens from Gaza. They want to import terrorists at a time in which terrorist sympathizers have taken over campuses. Jamal Bowman, Captain Fire Alarm, Jamal Bowman did an interview, and I'll play this for you in a little while, saying it's time to bring more of them here. Because it's good for the country. Bring the actual terrorists to a nation where terrorist sympathizers are chanting and overtaking and commandeering spaces on our college campuses. Yeah, what could possibly go wrong? The real question is what kind of nut jobs are we dealing with here? So there's so many different things. So I'll talk to Ira Melman. So Peter Kirsenow and Ira Melman. We'll talk about both those gentlemen about a lot of these things together. But, of course, I want to talk about them with you. 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. Let me start with our pledge, as if we were going to do the top 9 to 9, and then I can dive into the specifics on these stories that I think you need to hear and that we need to discuss. And, by the way, I need you to get off the bench. I need you to get off the bench today, particularly in the first hour. I want to hear from you. I know that the overwhelming 99% of radio listeners do not like to call radio shows. They like to sit and listen to radio talk shows. They don't like to call in. They're a little bit nervous. They're a little bit more interested in kind of watching the whole thing go by than participating. But I need you to get off the bench, and I need you to have your say when I ask you a couple of very specific questions, which will be coming up momentarily. But first, let's go ahead and do our pledge. Patriots, stand up and face your flag if you have one. Let's pledge allegiance to it and the country it represents. If you are a supporter of illegal immigration, if you are a supporter of the surrendering of sovereignty, if you're a supporter of anti-Semitism being paraded on American campuses, making Jewish students terrified to go outside of their dorms, if you support any of those things, then don't stand proudly with us near the flag. Instead, take a knee like the good little Marxist dog that you are. Apologies here, we get a little bit of a glitch on the audio side of things, but for those of us who do believe in what this country stands and stands for and represents,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. So now let's get on with this. Here's, if you have not been watching the news cycle over the last 12 to 24, here's what is going on. The occupation of the quads, you know, the lawn spaces, if you will, on all of these campuses, starting with Columbia University in New York, NYU, Yale, virtually all of the Ivies, stretching across the country and over to the West Coast. All of these occupations of quads and lawns and so forth, which has been expressly condemned as being illegal and against university rules on virtually all of their campuses, they've expanded that now, and they're breaking into the buildings, and they're occupying the buildings. At Columbia, officials have limited access to their own campus, the officials, after the students and their paid anti-Israel, anti-Semitic agitators occupied Hamilton Hall and carried furniture and metal barricades into the building. The university spokesman there, named Ben Chang, said safety remains the top priority, quote, in light of the protest activity, why don't you just call it what it is? In light of the rioting that is going on, this is very, very, very close to BLM-level rioting. Very close. The only thing missing right now, because the vandalism is going on, the destruction is going on, the only thing missing right now is the arson. How soon before they start setting fires to these university halls? In light of the protest activity, the statement reads, we have asked members of the university community who can avoid coming to Morningside campus to do so. Essential personnel should report to work according to university policy. Access to campus has been limited to students residing in residential buildings on campus and employees who provide essential services to campus buildings, labs, and residential student life. Campus access remains restricted today to COID only and essential personnel only as a safety measure, and that includes media access. Media access will be restored when safety conditions change. End quote. In an X post, the X post rather, protesters said they plan to remain at the hall until the university conceded to their CU apartheid divest organization's three demands: divestment, financial transparency, and amnesty for all of the idiot a-holes who are doing all of this. At the University of North Carolina, police have detained 30 people and cleared the anti-Israel encampment and did so within an hour. But that is leading to another standoff. Police had to make arrests there after the deadline to remove their encampment passed. And now, of course, the students are rebelling and then, of course, screaming for amnesty so that none of this is attached to their personal records. At Yale in New Haven, Connecticut, police have cleared an anti-Israel encampment there this morning, threatening students there with arrest and suspensions. The Columbia Autonomous Zone seizing Hamilton Hall, rebranding it. They have called it now Heinz Hall. Liberty University is holding public prayer gatherings rather than riots. That's a good sign. Facilities worker at Columbia declared that he had been taken hostage and was not allowed to leave. Jewish campus students on campuses all across the country are all hiding in their dorms and afraid to move. Those who are not afraid to move are finding out why they should be, because they are being stopped, blockaded, pushed and shoved and harassed, and denied access to various parts of campus. All of this is going on as thousands of students have followed like lemmings, or sheep, if you will. Choose your metaphor. All of these individuals have followed the... I don't even know if they're following the paid protesters or if the paid protesters are there to support and follow the students. But at any rate, what they have done, these students, this is finals week, by the way, in most of these universities. Graduation is a week away. This is a very important time on college campuses. For seniors, it's their last finals. For other students, I mean, their academic records are being fashioned right now. And they're supposed to study. They're supposed to take exams. They're supposed to be able to concentrate and focus. My daughter's in the middle of her law school finals right now down at the University of Tennessee. My son is in the middle of his final. Actually, they start today, not in the middle, but they start his final exam start today and continue through the rest of this week. And I know what they're doing. How are these kids on these campuses supposed to prepare and take these exams? The stress of final exams is high enough when their campuses are under siege and they can't move and leave their dorm or their apartment and go down to the dining hall to get some food and take a little break here because they can't get there. And they're closed down because of all of this nonsense. These kids have decided something that I need to ask and I need to try to understand because it's just my nature. I'm trying to understand how it is that something these little mindless robots, these brainwashed sheep, that they had never even heard of 6 months ago. These people had never even heard of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. They didn't know that rockets rain in on Israel from Palestinian strongholds by way of Hezbollah in the north, in Lebanon, by way of Gaza in the southern region, by way of Palestinian Islamic Jihad in the northern region of Gaza, by the Houthis. They didn't know about this regular activity over there. They had no idea that Hamas was an elected governmental organization in charge of Hamas in charge of Gaza, in addition to being a terrorist organization. They had no idea about the five different offers of a two-state solution that Hamas has rejected, that Gazans have rejected. They don't know anything at all about any of this, and they didn't care to. They're living in the United States. They're living their best lives. Everything is good. Everything is glorious. 6 months ago, they knew nothing. But now, 6 months later, this is something to stake their future on. This is the most important thing in their lives. Screaming, free, free Palestine. Screaming from the river to the sea. Hey, what river? I don't know. Free, free Palestine. What sea are you talking about? It's free, free Palestine. I'm guessing, and this might be giving them a little too much credit, less than 3% of these quarter wits, I can't even call them half wits, that's too much credit, these quarter wits could find Israel on a map. If you gave them a sectioned off map, but without the actual labels, you can draw the actual nation borders. But if you gave them a border-only map and said, find the region of the world in which you can find Israel, maybe 10% of them could find the region. Now specifically point out the spot that is Israel. I'm saying less than 3%. And that's, like I said, being generous. If you gave them a map, the same type of map, and said, now point to Palestine, I bet you close to 100% of them would try to find it, which proves the point about how incredibly stupid and mindless and robotic and brainwashed they are, because there is no Palestine on any map. But they would hunt and think that there is. So despite knowing absolutely nothing about the religion of Judaism, despite knowing nothing about the region of the Middle East, despite knowing nothing about Israel and its history, despite knowing nothing about Hamas and its history, despite knowing nothing about the fact that they use human beings as shields and that they hide their munitions in heavily populated civilian areas, so that when Israel strikes back against them, civilians die, and then they can blame the Israelis for being so inhuman. Despite the fact they know nothing about the war that is going on there, and that 6 months ago they had never even heard of any of this, now they're willing to be arrested. Now they're willing to be suspended and to have their lives potentially forever altered by this. And why? Because of the hive mentality that is so pervasive in these universities. Because of the terror that overcomes them when they dare to think for themselves. Holy cow, if I have a thought that is my own, if I have an opinion that isn't being reflected by thousands of people around me, then I'm going to be in their crosshairs. I'm going to have a bullseye on my chest. I am going to be the one that is targeted for cancellation, ostracization, and maybe worse. So I'm going to buzz around like the other little drones, the other little worker bees, and we're all going to do our little jobs here, and I'm not going to think for myself. That is a terrifying thought for them. That's what they are doing, and that's why it is where it is right now. Violence has already begun. Vandalism has already begun. Blockading and holding people hostage in a very loose sense of the word by not allowing them to leave and go where they want to has already begun. And this isn't even close to being over, especially when there is no leadership whatsoever. Because I ask you once again, where's Joe Biden? Where is the president of the United States, as the universities in his country are under siege in the worst, most widespread campus-wide protest that we have seen since the Vietnam War? The president of the United States is AWOL, gone, nowhere to be found, other than at the correspondents' dinner, cracking jokes. Where is he? What's he saying? What's he doing? What's he doing about this? Is he dispatching staff, administrative personnel, to go to talk to university presidents, city police departments in which those universities reside about how to deal with this? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Meanwhile, the leadership on campus, most of them are proud of this. University presidents aren't doing anything, or at least most of them. And university professors are talking about how much they admire the students, like this university professor. Columbia University professor Bruce Robbins says this about the student robots.
I admire the students enormously. I admire their sentiments and their courage. I'm very disappointed in the administration. I think it's very short-sighted for them not at the very, very least. I think they should be considering divestment more seriously. if they saw themselves in history, they would be thinking about South Africa and how clearly it was a good thing. History has judged it to be a good thing to divest from a white supremacist state. The slaughter in Gaza certainly stacks up pretty well against the white supremacy of South Africa.
That's a professor at an Ivy League university, a Columbia University in New York, declaring that Israel's existence is the same thing, and Israel fighting to stop itself from being wiped out of the world, wiped off of the map, is the same thing as a white supremacist government of South Africa, and that we should divest from Israel so that it will be easier to wipe them off of the map in order for it to be to stop the slaughter in Gaza, which stacks up pretty well against the white supremacy of South Africa, he said. Slaughter in Gaza. There is no such thing happening, of course. The point being, though, facts, truth, these things do not matter to radicals. Radicals use and weaponize facts. They use them to advance their agenda by twisting them into little pretzels. That if there is a high death toll in a place like Gaza, then that's a slaughter and that's a genocide by Israel, despite the facts and the truth that it is Israel that is the one fighting the existential battle. Existential meaning they're fighting for their existence. So I've got questions, and I would like you to answer them. I've also got more news on this. Ohio State's president, by the way, has shown some guts. Ohio State's president is not allowing this stuff to grow on the Columbus campus. That's a good thing. But I've got a lot more to talk about, and I want to talk to you, and I want to listen to you. Moms and dads, be prepared to get into the game. 216-901-0945.
The Answer.
All right, it's 9:35. Appreciate you joining us. This is your chance to get in because I got Kirsten out coming up at 10:10. He takes us all the way to 11 o'clock, and then we've got Ira Melman going to check in. So this is really your best shot. 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. I want to ask you something. Mom, dad, if you have, and if you're a grandma, grandpa, and your kids are grown, but try to think what you would do now if they were in school now at college. If you knew about, if your student went to a Columbia, to a North Carolina, to a Yale, to Northwestern or USC or Berkeley, or any, if your kid's college campus had this stuff going on right now, all of the things you are seeing in what is now becoming kind of wall-to-wall coverage, if you saw this stuff on TV, whether you see your kid on TV or not, are you going to get them? What if your student, your child, was on one of these campuses? And I'm not saying you know they're one of the protesters, but what if they just might be one of the students actually trying to do finals, actually trying to study? And there is a rabid anti-Semitic group of hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are prepared to blow like a powder keg, where police are being called in, where some lawmakers are calling for National Guardsmen to come in to try to keep peace, try to stop to break up the encampments. They're using tear gas. They're using pepper spray in some campuses already. Students are not being allowed to advance and to pass into various parts of campus. For your child's safety, in addition to perhaps their participation in any of this, are you going to get them? Or do you just trust that, nah, my Joey knows what to do. My Joey knows how to stay safe. My Joey will be fine. Joey and Jenny, yeah, they're good. They're just going to go to class, and they're just going to go, and they're not a part of that nonsense. What are you doing? I've asked this question as a dad who's got two kids on two different campuses right now. And I ask them every day, do you see any signs? Are there any groups? Are there any organizations? Is there any encampment? Is anybody screaming free, free Palestine? Anybody doing any of the, you know, we love Hamas stuff going on in your campus? And is there any pushback to that? Any counter-protesters? Things that could lead to potential conflicts, confrontations, violence? And I've been assured by both of my kids that, nope, we're good. Nothing happening here. Because I can tell you this, if it wasn't that, if it wasn't good, if it wasn't clear, if they did have that nonsense going on, I would be telling them, get in your cars, pack as much of your stuff as you can, and get home. We'll deal with the final exam portion of this later. I promise you, you will not take zeros. But I also promise you, you will not be on campus when any of this stuff blows. Watch me and every lawyer that I can possibly ever afford to hire take them on in court if they try to fail you from your classes because you fled campus before the violence started and missed your finals. That's what I would be doing. But that's me. I'm an overprotective father. I will fully admit that. I have been from the day my daughter was born. From the day she was born, I would follow her around so that if she fell, I would catch her. And I still feel the same way now. Now it's a little bit more metaphorical, but I will do everything I can to catch and protect. That's just who I am. It's not right, probably. They should probably skin their knees more than I allowed them to, but that's just the way that it goes, that you are what you are, and that's what I've done. What about you? If you found out your kids were on one of those campuses, or not, let me rephrase, you know what campus your kid is on. If your kid on his or her campus, you found out that it started to turn into one of these really potentially violent protest sites, would you go and get them, make them leave that campus? How would you handle it? I'd like to know. By the way, kudos to President Ted Carter at Ohio State University. We told you on Thursday, and I kind of mocked Ohio State at that time because I said, there it is. There's, instead of TOSU, people like say the Ohio State University, it's POSU, Progressive State University, because you knew this was coming there. And they started the encampments on the Ohio State campus as well. And I was very disgusted by that, very disappointed by that. And I just said it was only a matter of time. And then 36, I think more than three dozen students got arrested on Thursday. Well, that ticked off the radicals who were doing the encampments and those who want to do it again. And they're really, really angry. So Ted Carter, the president of Ohio State, issued a very lengthy statement discussing and explaining why he called for what he called for, which is the police to come and take these people away, arrest them, and break up those encampments immediately. Part of what he said, I'm going to read. As a public university, demonstrations, protests, and disagreement regularly occur on our campus, so much so that we have our trained staff and public safety professionals on site for student demonstrations, for safety, and to support everyone's right to engage in these activities. Sadly, in recent days, I have watched significant safety issues be created by encampments on other campuses across our nation. These situations have caused in-person learning and commencement ceremonies to be canceled. Ohio State's campus will not be overtaken in this manner. We have been abundantly clear in a multitude of our communications that Ohio State has and will enforce the law and university policy, which is what we did on April 25th. I most recently stated this in a campus message on April 22nd. Dr. Shivers again reinforced this, and the rules will apply to finals week in a message to all students on April 23rd. The university's long-standing space rules are content-neutral and enforced uniformly. Thursday's actions were taken because those involved in creating the encampment on South Oval were in violation of these rules and had been notified of this beginning at 4:30 a.m. when the first signs of an encampment began to emerge. And I'll stop there, but just to say, good for Carter for getting out in front of this. I mean, for a second there, I almost thought Ohio State University was in Florida because only Florida has been acting this way. Only Florida has been in front of and out in front of and making sure that it's not reactionary but rather proactionary to tell every university, if you allow this on your campuses, the kids are going to be suspended and expelled and the universities are going to be held accountable. And guess what they're doing? The universities are indeed responding. They are blockading. They are not allowing any of these kinds of things to take place. So in some parts of the country, it's being done right. And for now, at Ohio State, it is being done right. But sadly, if you turn on any news source right now, whether it be a television or a website or anything else, you are going to see really, really ramped up, more agitated pro-terrorist organizations rallying these students. And it's starting to become, like I said, vandalism, is starting to grow, and you know where vandalism starts, eventually arson, eventually violence follows as well. So what would you do if your kid was on campus? Where's Joe Biden? One of the other questions I want you to answer. How can he be AWOL at this particular point in time? 216-901-0945. Let's go to Steve in Collinwood first. Steve, thanks for waiting. You're on the air. Fire away.
Yeah, your answer your first question. Where's Joe Biden? He's in the bathroom. He's been in there for 6 hours. Okay, that's that. About going to the campus, I would leave a Bradley fighting vehicle and grab my running on the way out, and then I pick my kid up.
But, I would too. I would not go into the middle of that to pick my kid up unless I was armed, quite frankly. I would absolutely not. And I know it's a gun-free zone. I'd be breaking the rules that I'd want them to enforce, but I'm not going into a potentially violent situation unless I'm prepared the way Kyle Rittenhouse was.
Well, why is this all happening? Because people were looking at PAMAs as people look at it as like a freedom fighting or a terrorist organization. It should be looked at as like a mafia. It's the mafia. It's a big one too. And all this stuff that is happening is they're flexing their muscles, because all these scenes that you said, you turn the TV on and it's a little one here and everything is being covered. This also coverage goes out to all the stations in the world. They pick it up in Tunisia, they pick it up in Algeria, they pick it up in Morocco, and under the current of the undercurrent of all this is that it's fundraising, because Hamas needs money. It's a mafia. You know, the big leaders don't wear the checkered flags. They wear Armani suits, and they drive $100,000 cars. And they live in Qatar.
I was going to say, and they don't go anywhere near Gaza. They live in Qatar and they live in luxury. You're exactly right. While they watch all of this, violence that they fund where they watch it happen.
So they need money because they can't collect money. They used to collect money. Gaza was their honeypot. They needed money. They either taxed people or stole it. So, and they ruled the roost, but they don't have that anymore. So, and the leaders, it's like the mafia. The guys at the top, they want more money. They have lifestyles that maintain it. So,
well, and they're spending money too, and not just them, by the way. And thank you, Steve, for the call. I appreciate it. But George Soros and the others who are trying to grow this rebellion, if you will, they're spending money too, because as everyone knows, these are not all students. A lot of them are students, but a lot of them are the professional paid protesters and agitators that go there to stir this stuff up and make it worse. These are the ones that are kind of like the feds that were in the crowd on January 6th, telling the kids, break the window, let's go in, we got to get in there, let's occupy the hall, you know, intifada now, let's go. They're being pushed into this, and too many of the kids whose brains are simply mush, in large part because of their age, but in even greater part because that's what the universities have done. Why do you think these young kids, these 18 and 19 and 20-year-old kids, again, who I said at the top of the show, who had no idea about any of this stuff 6 months ago, now it's the most important thing in their lives, because they have been trained like SEALs. They've just been brainwashed to flap their little flippers together every time that they are told and believe what they are told and bounce the ball off their nose. That's what they've been trained to do. Learning classical Marxism means understanding oppression and oppressors. And when we identify who the oppressed people are, we will march for them. We will fight for them. We will do whatever it takes for them. And we will push back against the oppressors. Why? Because it helps divide us. It helps divide us in a divided America, a divided United States. It would be an oxymoron to be divided united, but you get the point. The division of this country is the goal. City by city, town by town, and really family by family, this is what their goal is. So they're doing this in colleges and on campuses every day. Now they found a cause. Now they found a new cause. This is the one. Free, free Palestine. River to the sea. Do you know anything? Nope. Just get your butt out there and flap your little flippers together like we told you to. And the students are like, let's go. Professor Robbins says so. He's proud of me. Let's go to John. John and Chardon, go ahead.
Morning, Bob.
Good morning.
What should happen with the administration they should be sending in the National Guard. But it won't happen with this current administration.
Administration doesn't make that call. The National Guard is deployed by state governors. They're the ones who actually control their state's guard. So it'll be up to Kathy Hochul if she wants to deploy the National Guard to Columbia or to New York University and so forth. You know, the governors make that call.
Yeah. Well, and then these protesters, I question who they really are. I mean, especially the paid protesters. And are they really students? Well, we have one chance to make this whole thing right, and it's coming up on this November 6th, because if we can get the right people in, they're going to make the right moves, I think.
Well, do yourself a favor, though, my friend. Vote early, because if you wait until November 6th, you're going to miss the boat, because the election's November 5th. So make sure you get out there and vote early. Maybe take advantage of the 30 days of early voting, just so we don't make sure we miss the day. Okay, buddy?
Aye, aye.
All right, thank you, John. I appreciate it. Your point, by the way, is the right one. It is going to be this election that decides so much of this. It's extraordinarily important that people understand that. People are talking about the funding, and they're talking about how, you know, where so much of the money for these things come from. Everybody's blaming George Soros, and rightfully so. George Soros is a huge, huge part of this. But you know who else is funding this, both intellectually and financially, are the professors. I got a story from the Washington Examiner this morning. As Federal Department of Education and congressional investigators gear up to probe the climate of anti-Semitism at Columbia and other universities, they might want to start by looking into the professors and administrators who fund the anti-Semites. They're easy to find. Just look up donors to anti-Semitic representatives like Sharia Tlaib in Michigan and Jihad Omar in Minnesota, who list their employers as Columbia in a federal database. This reporter for the Washington Examiner found at least 7 professors and a vice dean at the school donating to one or both of those lawmakers. Those faculty members are hardly alone in New York. Professors and administrators in New York University, City University of New York, gave to Tlaib and Omar in each of the last 3 election cycles. In total, staff at the 3 schools gave nearly $70,000 to these squad representatives, including $28,000 so far in this election cycle alone, the most ever. So these donations are going to people like Omar and Tlaib and Jayapal and others who are the lead promoters, if you will, of these campus protests, these ridiculous shutdowns and encampments and autonomous zones and so forth. At the University of California, staff members have given the same 2 congresswomen nearly $120,000. Why? Why are they donating money to members of Congress outside of their own state, outside of their own districts? And the answer is because they are all supporting the same thing, the anti-Semitic protests and encampments and potential violence on campus. This is exactly what their goal is. So George Soros is funding this. There's no question about that. You have a lot of professors who are actively involved in this, like I said, from a financial perspective and from an influential one. This is what they are encouraging their kids to do. Joanne is next. Joanne, go right ahead.
Good morning, Bob. You know, 2 things. I don't know what the percentage is of kids who actually graduate from college in 4 years. You have probably a better idea than I do. But aren't these the same kids who were denied their graduation from high school 4 years ago? Now they're going to be denied their college graduation, too?
Yeah, well,
I mean,
in some places,
kids,
yeah.
Aren't they?
In some places, you're right,
I mean,
that is.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you're going to touch on this today. One other thing. I just wondered if you've heard about this unredacting and releasing of all these documents from Canon down in Florida that shows that the, you know, government records department and the White House colluded and sent Trump 2 pallets of documents 7 months after he left office. They're wondering if they planted stuff. Yeah, I mean, this is crazy.
I read it. I read about it anyway, but probably not going to focus on it today because I'm focusing on what's happening on these campuses.
You know, but I mean, I think it's something we need to kind of touch on down the road. But, I mean, I feel bad for these kids that, you know, actually go to school and work for 4 years to get out in 4 years, and now they can't graduate again.
Yeah, I completely agree. It is a sad thing to see. So many of those kids, and my son was, and thanks for the call. My son was, you know, in his senior year when all that happened, and you know, he had his graduation, but it was obviously a year, a tumultuous year in which their sports were canceled. Their graduation was some bizarre thing in which every individual came up one at a time into the gym to get their diploma because people weren't allowed to be near one another and all of that garbage. But you're right, some of them had them canceled altogether, and now many of those kids who suffered so greatly back then are indeed now in the middle of all of this too. So it's a very good point. Thank you. I want to go to Ralph calling us from Canton. Ralph, you're on AM 1420 The Answer. Fire away.
This is rinse and repeat. What they want is the officers, marshals, policemen, whoever. They're waiting for them to make a mistake and turn this into a January 6th Kent State thing so that they can start scaring the police and the military again from acting. We got real professionals in here now. These are sleeper cells, and they have been added on to with what's going over the border. We're dealing with professionals now.
I think you're right. I think you're right. You know, once the National Guard or the police try to actually enforce the rules and enforce the laws, and somebody confronts one of them, and one of them has to defend himself or felt like he needed to defend himself, and we have a violent encounter, God forbid a lethal one. But once that happens, you're right. The game changes completely. And I think it's really, really cryptic that we are just 5 days away from the anniversary of Kent State, you know, on May 4th, 1970. We were just 5 days away from it, and now we're talking about guardsmen going into college campuses to restore order.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, these people are dressed as officers. I mean, these guys know what they're doing. And, by the time we find out the truth, which you know, it's years later, we're still getting videos from January 6th.
You're right.
40,000 hours are still out there that we haven't seen.
No, you're 100% right. And I made that comparison earlier on. And thank you for the call, Ralph. I appreciate it very much from Canton. Make sure you call back. I made the comment earlier on that it reminded me of January 6th when the feds were, you know, because they've gone from occupying the lawns, you know, and the quads and so forth in these campuses right now to breaking into buildings. At that Cal Polytech Humboldt campus, they've overtaken, I think they said, five buildings now, and they have made them essentially no-go zones. They've declared those buildings to be under the control of the students and the agitators, and I said about that what I'm saying about what's going on at Columbia now that they've moved from the quad or the lawn into one of the buildings, into Hamilton Hall. These kids aren't making those decisions themselves. The professionals are in, just like the feds were in the crowd outside the Capitol on J6, saying, we got to get inside. We got to go. Let's go. Let's go. We got to get inside. Pushing and urging these people to go in and do something they wouldn't have ordinarily have done. That's what's happening here. These paid professionals are in these crowds on these campuses trying to push these young, brainless or brain-dead robot kids who have been already programmed to think like activists rather than students, pushing them to go in and do something they wouldn't ordinarily have done. Smash the windows. Break the windows. Get inside. Barricade them. We are here. We own this place now. Pushing them to do things they wouldn't have done ordinarily. You're right. It is coordinated, and it is professional, and it is indeed with the intention, as you say, of provoking confrontations with law enforcement so they can then declare that the police and the law enforcement... Strangely, this is the one difference between the two. On J6, everybody was with the police because the police were only shooting and attacking Trump supporters. But now everybody will be with the students, and if the police do something wrong, they'll be against the police. That's the one difference in the scenarios you just described. We'll take a time out here and get Kersenow into the picture next. AM 1420, The Answer.
To help you out.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into a thousand years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420, The Answer. With your host, Bob France.
All right, hour number two underway now, 7 minutes past 10 o'clock on this Tuesday. It's the 30th morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024. We're still following all of the campus craziness, and that's a very, very loose way of saying this is not craziness. This makes it sound like it's loony. This is very, very dangerous. When they go from occupying quads and lawns and encampments and so forth to breaking into buildings, smashing windows, zip tying doors shut, we are very, very closely approaching what I believe is the start of BLM riots. These are BLM style riots. These kinds of things started out that way 4 years ago, and now the only thing missing right now is the arson. Do not think for 1 second that that is not going to be on the table for some of these lunatics. Universities are doing what they can in some cases, like Ohio State. They continue to let the inmates run the asylum in other cases on other campuses. And how this all ends, I'm really afraid to find out. Let's welcome our friend Peter Kersenow in now to analyze and explain this to us. Peter Kersenow is an attorney. He is a former law professor. He is still a lawyer, and he also happens to be the longest serving member in the history of the United States Commission on Civil Rights. Peter, good morning.
Bob, how you doing?
I don't know, man. I guess I'm good because neither one of my kids are involved in any of this stuff, and the two campuses on which they reside right now are clear of and free of all of the nonsense. But I'll tell you what, if I had a kid on any one of those other campuses, Peter Kersenow, I would not be good. I'd be very, very worried. How about you?
Absolutely, and I would be taking some type of action. And I'm not sure precisely what the action would be. I know, surprisingly, my alma mater, Cornell, has kind of clamped down. That really shocked the heck out of me. I know many of my fellow alums with whom I've been in contact, and the ones who have real clout, that is the billionaires, said no mas. They don't like this kind of stuff, and that has to be done. You know, we saw what happened University of Pennsylvania with Bill Ackman and a few others, and, you know, Robert Kraft and folks like that. When the guys with the big bucks, the guys who make the big donations, say, hey, this can't stand, that gets the university's attention. But you would think it would get their attention far before that, because let's be frank about this. What we're seeing now are dangerous protests, and not just protests, but violent actions that are taken to undermine the United States of America. Much of it's financed by the usual suspects. Much of it is being fomented by Iran and China, and our federal government has been inert in responding to this, as have many universities. These university presidents should all resign if they don't know how to get a handle on this. There are hundreds of thousands of students who are being prevented from getting their college educations. They're spending tens of thousands of dollars to get their purported educations, which I swear I'm somewhat agnostic as to how well educated they are, or the type of education they're getting. But there's so many reasons why this needs to be nipped in the bud now. It should not be tolerated, not the least of which is the purported generating impetus, and that is anti-Semitism. At the Civil Rights Commission, we've been on top of this for a while, except for right now. I have to tell you, we started in 2006 sounding alarm about growing campus anti-Semitism. As you know, you and I have talked about this at least once before, right around October 7th. And I'd proposed to the Civil Rights Commission that we at least conduct investigations. We don't have enforcement authority over these things at the Civil Rights Commission. The most we can do is gather evidence and give it to the enforcement authorities, such as Office of Civil Rights of the Department of Education, or maybe Congress to take some action, or at least some legislative action. But nonetheless, even there, my progressive colleagues only wanted to investigate this issue and adduce evidence and make recommendations to Congress if we also included Islamophobia and anti-Asian discrimination. And at the time I made this proposal back in October, there were no incidents of Islamophobia or anti-Asian violence, at least not nearly at the level of what was going on with respect to Jewish students and Jews across the country, period. So progressives are trying to play this game where they're trying to placate or mollify their base, and as a result, they're really feeding into this lunacy, and that's the nicest way I can put it. But again, parents, donors, and others need to take a stand. Our university systems are failing dramatically, and not just failing in terms of enforcing anti-discrimination norms, but we've seen the product of many of these universities is horrible. They're not teaching anything. They're country clubs that have parties almost every single day. You're paying thousands and thousands of dollars in tuition, and what are they learning? I'm here to tell you, I've talked to a number of lawyers. I remember having dinner. I'm sorry for this monologue, but I'm kind of jacked up about this. Having dinner with an attorney from the West Coast about a year ago after a Civil Rights Commission meeting. You know, he's in a major law firm, and he was talking about how the new students, the new lawyers that they're getting are, in comparison to those from, say, 15 to 20 years ago, cannot think. You know, they can't put one thought in front of another. They can't formulate good sentences. It's pathetic. It's what's going on at these universities, but they have plenty of time to indulge in these kind of anti-American protests, some of which are extremely dangerous, and most importantly, they're fomenting hatred and violence against Jews. They are being used as puppets by the Soroses of the world, the Chinese government, and the Iranians.
Well, they're not being taught, Pete. They're not being taught what to, or how to think. They're being taught what to believe, and do not believe anything else. Only believe what we tell you. And if anybody tells you anything else, don't debate them on the issue. Silence them immediately. That's not thinking. That is not thinking at all. That is just reflexive, reactionary. A regurgitation of the tripe that we fill your heads with. These are the, you know, you mentioned that universities have to get this under control. I have to believe that low key, Pete, they're happy with what's going on because they're seeing the young activists that they are training inside their halls starting to break out of it break out of those halls, that is, and to share and spread that activism and all of it being, you know, very, very dangerous, quite frankly, like you said, to Jews, this anti-American sentiment and so on and so forth. They've been pushing this into their heads and making them absorb all of this and spit it back to them. And now they're starting to kind of, you know, get out of control, which is exactly what they want them to do. They don't want to bring it under control, Pete.
Yeah, some of these professors, clearly, what you just articulated, some of these professors clearly want this. But there are, look, I spend a good amount of time talking to these folks. There are a lot of professors who keep their heads down. Maybe they shouldn't. Maybe they should be saying something, but they want their careers preserved. But there are, you know, those who are in certain real academic disciplines like physics, you know, things that you can quantify, mathematics, things of that nature, who are appalled by this, who are against this. But again, they keep their heads down. There are a few others in the humanities, but not many. But what you get from a lot of the humanities is precisely what you said. Many of these professors are radicalized. Many of them were the students that you saw, you know, years and years ago demonstrating on college campuses. Many of the administrators are those who now, they're in positions of power. But years or decades ago, they're the ones that you saw at the 1968 Democratic Convention and others. I mean, you're talking about real radicals, and they are in power now. But don't discount the influence of foreign sources such as China, Iran, and the Gulf states, either in terms of providing funding for certain types of programs or in terms of true subversive activity where they are manipulating a lot of these airhead students. So it's a major problem. The FBI needs to be on top of this. Clearly, the U.S. Department of Education needs to be on top of it. But unfortunately, under the Biden administration, you have many of the folks there. They are the same kind of folks who find sympathy with the radicals on college campuses. The Office of Civil Rights of the Department of Education is probably the principal office that should be addressing these issues, and they're nowhere to be found. As you know, I think I sent you a copy of one of my NRO pieces from a couple of days ago where I outlined a 10-point plan for what needs to be done immediately. And it's not rocket science. You know, it's not rocket science. What has to be done and who's supposed to be doing it, whether it's college administrators, whether it's the Office of Civil Rights of the Department of Education, whether it's other enforcement arms, whether it's Congress. There's certain things that you can do immediately and must be done in a responsible republic. But we have been sleepwalking for too long a period of time. Ordinary Americans, and by the way, I mean, I have so much to say about this. I know I'm rambling, but this is the progeny of DEI, okay? You and I have talked about this for several years, that the natural outgrowth of DEI would be things such as this. And it's not stopping with this, believe me. But diversity, equity, and inclusion, that sounds so nice, diversity, equity, and inclusion. If you go to any of these classes, if you listen to the instruction, it is inevitable that you're going to get this kind of mentality where these kids are out here saying death to Jews, death to Israel, because DEI elevates certain groups over others. It is, frankly, a system of overt discrimination. It is one of the most pernicious concepts to come up in, say, I'd say, the last 50 years. Yet it's being celebrated for good reason by many people who are smarter and knew precisely what they were trying to do, that is, our enemies. But it's being celebrated by airheads in academia. It sounds like an oxymoron, but actually it's really the best description you can give it. DEI is the natural, this is the natural consequence of DEI. And among, if you go to any DEI instruction, what you will find is, if it's not said explicitly, it is clearly implied that there's a hierarchy of ethnicities and races. At the very bottom are whites and specifically Jews. The three groups that are crapped on, for lack of a better term, are whites, Jews, and males. If you fall into any of those categories, or if you're all three, you're at the bottom of the DEI totem pole. On the other end of the totem pole are anyone that your academic betters consider to be quote-unquote oppressed, which are actually nothing but oppressed. And so this is the kind of totem pole you get, and this is the natural outgrowth of DEI and all kinds of other stupid stuff, because we haven't been educating in this country for the last half century.
No. Yeah, it's very well said, Peter, and that's why we love having you here, because you're exactly right. You have a lot of experience with this, much more than the rest of us, particularly in the Ivies, although this has expanded beyond the Ivies, as you know. A lot of the other universities, University of North Carolina was one of the worst ones now. This Cal Poly Humboldt campus out there, five different buildings have been taken over there. So this is much more than the Ivies, but you've got experience there and as a professor, so you know this more than most. But let's go to the government side of this now. Pete, dozens and dozens and dozens of campuses are dealing with this now. It is growing out of control, and I haven't heard jack squat from Brandon.
Right.
Where is the leadership? Do you know, and I'm sure you do, this is rhetorical, you and I both know that if this same exact thing had broken out while Trump was president, and Trump had spent the last 3 weeks watching this grow, watching this spread, and said nothing about it, or in the one time somebody did corner him on Earth Day when he was walking with AOC out there, Biden said, I oppose all anti-Semitism on campus, but, you know, giving that other side of it, but I also think people need to really try to understand where the Palestinians are coming from. In other words, not playing it, taking a side, because he knows damn well he's going to lose Michigan if he doesn't kiss the A of the Arab Americans and Muslim Americans who live there. And he can't win the presidency unless he wins Michigan. So if this was Trump, and it wouldn't be, because I guarantee you this strike against Israel would not have been made if Trump was still in power, the same way Putin wouldn't have done what he did. But if Trump was in charge while the country's campuses were burgeoning, violent, hell holes, he would be blamed for it if he stood silent. And nobody is even asking Joe Biden about it anymore.
Well, I think, all you have to do is, and I didn't watch it, but I watched replays of it, is the White House Correspondents' Dinner. The reason why he's not being asked is because his people, meaning the White House press corps and most of, and 90% of the media, understand that if they were to ask him these questions, he would fail miserably, and it would highlight his failures in a way that would be damaging to his political prospects. So they're trying to, as you said, give him a warm tongue bath. They're trying to erect a cordon around him to protect him from this type of scrutiny. It's not working. By the way, it is not working. First of all, it's because he's too stupid and doesn't realize how to properly manage the media, even though they're giving him every single break in the world. But most importantly, is this is one of those events where many people are touched. Everyone sees it. People have family members who are affected by this. And the blatant anti-Semitism is so anti-American, is so despicable, that I think even people who aren't engaged in these kinds of things say, this is a bridge too far. This is horrendous. For those of us who are in this all the time, and I'm here to say, look, I'm opposed to discrimination on any basis, you know, based on status, based on religious affiliation, anything else like that. But I've been particularly concerned about anti-Semitism for a long, long time because the, frankly, the evidence is there that we have a significant problem, particularly on college campuses, particularly in leftist circles, about anti-Semitism. And anybody who's spent just 15 seconds reading history knows that anti-Semitism has a way of metastasizing catastrophically if you don't nip it in the bud. And too few, if any, of our governmental institutions are taking appropriate actions to suppress this, to rectify it, to punish those who are engaged in this kind of despicable conduct. And among other things, let's put the anti-Semitism aside for a second. To have a functioning college, you have to have certain norms and standards. And when the inmates are running the asylum, especially during exam time,
yes,
you know, my goodness,
and
what
the graduation
are you paying
time
for? Right. If I'm paying, some folks are paying upwards of $80,000 in tuition and fees and board and everything else. $80,000 for this? The best thing you can do, I don't usually recommend this, okay, because I think we live in a society, despite I'm a lawyer, that's way too litigious. But this may be one of the few cases where I would exhort people, really exhort people, sue the pants out of the college administrations that are failing to provide the education for which you are paying ridiculous amounts of money. Sue them for their failure to provide the college education. Sue them for failing to protect the safety of your sons and daughters. Sue the pants off them for any theory you can think of so they finally get their minds right, as they said in Luke. My goodness. This is lunacy.
What about the parents? What about the parents of the kids who are doing the threatening of other parents' sons or daughters? What about the ones that have joined the professional agitators that are out there camping and participating in this?
Yeah, the best way I think of dealing with them is simply expel their little brats. Maybe some of them get reinstated, but the fact of expulsion will really have a chilling effect on any of these idiots who think about doing it again. It's one thing to have a vocal protest. It's one thing to exercise First Amendment rights. It's a whole nother thing to engage in anti-Semitism, threatening conduct, violence, property damage, so on and so forth. And by the way, I won't mind if a few of these anti-American knuckleheads get caught up or swept up in the expulsion stream. This is something that I think needs to have, you need to have a deterrent effect. And most of these college administrations, first of all, are too weak-kneed and spineless. Second of all, sympathize too much that you will hear so much anti-Americanism, as we all have seen now, on college campuses, it's extraordinary. And certain types of thoughts are not permitted on college campuses. In other words, if you are a patriotic American, you are keeping your head down on college campuses. You're keeping your opinions to yourself. If you hate America, you are celebrated. You're given a platform. You're given a megaphone because many of your college administrators and or instructors, you know, they empathize or sympathize with you. We can't be funding in the United States of America. Our tax dollars are going to these institutions to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars, billions of dollars. Why are we paying for our own demise? Why are we paying to be told that America is a hateful country? No mas.
Yeah, well, and, you know, why are we paying them anyway? Aside from all of this, I mean, Hugh Hewitt talks about this a lot. There are universities with endowments.
Yep.
$10 billion, $20 billion, $30 billion, $40, $50, $60 billion endowments, which doesn't even count their tuitions, which are exorbitant, as you say, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year for so many of these places. They can't function without tax dollars. They can't function with their own endowments and their own the charges that they make, with loans that are guaranteed and, by the way, may not be paid back. But, I mean, in all seriousness, why we pay them tax dollars anyway is a mystery to me. I want to play a clip here before the bottom of the hour break. Well, I better wait. It's already 10:20, almost 10:27. I've got a clip here from Columbia professor Bruce Robbins I want to play for you, Pete, and I want to get your response to on this thing. And then I want to talk about the eight things that you say must happen here. In your article for the National Review, at minimum, the following eight actions should be taken as we try to address this. And we'll continue that conversation with Peter Kirsten right after this on AM 1420.
On The Answer.
All right, we continue. On Always Right Radio, AM 1420, The Answer with Peter Kirsten. Now it's 10:36. Thank you for sticking with us. Pete, I mentioned one particular professor. You were discussing professors and what they're doing in these schools and what the reaction of the university is. This is Columbia University professor Bruce Robbins. I don't know what subject he is a professor in. It doesn't really matter. But this is what he said. This is how he feels about what the students are doing at Columbia.
Element of students protesting the war at your university. How do you see it?
Well, I admire the students enormously. I admire their sentiments and their courage. I'm very disappointed in the administration. I think it's very short-sighted for them not at the very, very least. I mean, I think they should be considering divestment more seriously. If they saw themselves in history, they would be thinking about South Africa and how clearly it was a good thing. History has judged it to be a good thing to divest from a white supremacist state. The slaughter in Gaza certainly stacks up pretty well against the white supremacy of South Africa.
Pete, I'll let you take it.
Well, boy, give me about 4.5 hours. First, I'd like to fine him and slap him silly. I'm not threatening violence, okay? But nonetheless, you can gauge my reaction based on that sentiment. Here, a couple things. First of all, to equate Israel with an apartheid regime is sheer, I want to choose my words carefully, it's not the smartest approach. Now, there's so many differences between the two, you can't even begin to compare the two. Maybe he missed what has been going on in the world for maybe the last few hundred years, but particularly since 1939, there has been an attempt on many and multiple occasions to exterminate Jews. Jews have been living in Israel for 5,000 years without interruption. There's never been a Palestine, and Jews were there before there was a Palestine. To equate them with South Africa is blasphemous. It's profanity. It's ahistorical. It is outright stupid. It is evil. Okay, I can't, so many adjectives and superlatives. Any professor who has such a blinkered vision of history or current events needs to really, frankly, the administration really needs to think about whether or not this is somebody who's capable of teaching young people. You really have to make that determination. If you don't know fundamental facts about history, that you don't even have to be a history professor. I mean, you just have to be alive on this earth for more than 15 seconds. Bob, I don't even know where to begin. I've got so many things to say about this. It's truly extraordinary, but that's false. It's not extraordinary. It is almost par for the course what you see on college campuses.
Yep.
This is the accepted discourse. And you have to ask yourself, if you're a parent, a grandparent, anybody else, should you be sending your child to these schools, in addition to which being punished by paying exorbitant tuition, and then they come out, can't get a job, or they have this hateful vision of America and or its Western allies. We are funding our own demise.
It's one thing to question whether or not you should be sending your kids to these schools, and I agree with you, but let's go more specific to right now. If you have a kid at one of those schools, what are you doing? What is Papa Bear Pete doing? Are you going to get your kid? Are you getting them out of there before something? Because I think it's a tinderbox. I think Columbia and I think a lot of these universities are on the verge, on the precipice. And even if my kid is steering clear as much as he or she can from being in the middle of all of that, you know, there are blockades. You can't get to dining halls. There are things you can't even do to exist on campus, much less prepare and study and focus for final exams, for crying out loud. Are you going to get your kids out of there right now, or are you just going to let it play out?
I'm probably not somebody who's going to capitulate. I'm somebody who's going to take overt action. And the first thing I would do is, I think, this is probably how I proceed. You know, this is off the top of my head. I'd spend some time on this, by the way. First of all, my kids are smart, they're tough, they're resilient, so I wouldn't be too worried about them. They know how to handle themselves. But I'd make sure that I stayed on top of the situation and monitored it. And I think most of your listeners are probably in the same position. We're not little Twinkies. You know, we're conservatives. We know how to deal with the matters that life presents us pretty well. That doesn't mean we should be tolerating these matters. So, first thing I would do is I go to the Department of Education, Office of Civil Rights, and file a discrimination complaint against them and make sure that my representative is on top of it so that that complaint is investigated and it causes the university unholy hell. One of the things universities hate doing is being investigated by the Office of Civil Rights of the Department of Education or any department of the Department of Education. They hate it with a passion because it's extremely costly and it could result in debarment from federal contracts. And as you know, universities, almost every single one of them, get lots of money from these lucrative federal contracts. Hit them where it hurts, in other words. I'd file any kind of lawsuit available to me. Again, I'm not a litigious person. Despite the fact that I'm a lawyer, I usually try to tell people, resolve this outside of litigation. But one of the things that litigation does is it has a sting, a very powerful sting, both in terms of financial sting, a time suck sting, and also a publicity sting. These folks deserve to be stung big time. Third, I would call my fellow alums. I stay in touch with my college football teammates almost on a daily basis, frankly. We have a great relationship. 50 years after the fact, we have a great camaraderie. We email each other constantly, and I can tell you that, you know, I'm probably the least accomplished of all my college teammates. There are a couple of billionaires on my team, many millionaires, and many of them are donors to Cornell. When those folks say, you know what, I don't like what's going on, that gets the administration's attention big time. I'm simply the scribe. I'm simply the guy who articulates their frustration because I'm the lawyer. But the money is what talks. And if you can go coalesce with a group of parents or any other organization affiliated with the institution and say, you know what, we need to really consider whether or not we want to continue to finance this anti-Semitic atrocity, that will get their attention. Then go to the House of Representatives. Go to Jim Jordan. Go to the House Workforce Committee. Ask them to investigate. As I said before, institutions of any kind, but particularly colleges, hate investigations. It's one of the worst things they can go through. And when that investigatory body has the ability to, you know, withhold funds, that is the death penalty. That scares the heck out of them. Make sure that the House investigates if they're getting any foreign funding, and all of them are. They're getting tons of money from China and also from the Gulf states. Tons and tons and tons of money. China and the Gulf states are financing specific programs, specific institutions. Sometimes they have buildings named after them, okay? And the colleges, they don't care where they are whores. Let's face it. They will take money from almost any source, provided it's good money. That's all. That's all they care about. Make sure that they decide to do that, there will be a consequence. And I can go on and on and on, including student lawsuits. Organizations out there, there are organizations that are nonprofits where they have attorneys. This is simpler, similar to some of the other organizations that we've had on your program, Bob, Alliance Defending Freedom and others. But there are organizations out there. They're not as nearly as well-funded as leftist organizations, but there are lawyers out there who will bring lawsuits against student agitators and other students who impede the ability of students to achieve an education. You can bring lawsuits against the college, too. Now, again, I don't like litigiousness. I don't like bringing lawsuits. But you can't simply lay down your arms and say, well, we're not going to fight in this struggle. Otherwise, we're going to get overrun. We're going to lose. So hit back twice as hard. File lawsuits, file charges, file complaints. Make sure you tie up these bozos in the way they typically tie up conservatives, and make sure they never want to engage in this kind of conduct again. Tolerating anti-Semitism or racism or anything else like that. But most of all is, not most of all, but an addition to all those things is the fundamental anti-Americanism that we're seeing on college campuses. These little Twinkies, and again, I'm going to call them that, these little Twinkies who have been spoon-fed, who've been in comfort forever and ever, decide to protest the greatest nation on the face of the earth, which makes it possible for them to protest this way. Well, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to identify those individuals. If they engage in any kind of conduct that could be criminal, we want to make sure that potential employers know what's going on. One of the greatest deterrents you can have is when these folks are in college and they think they're going to come out because they got some Columbia degree or a Harvard degree or a Yale degree and get a big-time job at some, who knows, a hedge fund or something like that. We want to let them know that when they are seen marching down campus spewing anti-Semitic hate or any other kind of hate, the guys like Bill Ackman, the guys like Robert Kraft, the guys who actually hire people, we're not going to be interested. we're not going to be interested in you. And there have been several law firms, for example, that right after the stuff that happened last October and November on these college campuses, they said, we're not hiring. That got their attention really fast, but apparently they have short attention spans. Need to remind them, and need to remind these university administrators also, that if they don't get their act together, just like we saw with those three bozos who testified before Elise Stefanik, there are consequences, folks.
Penn,
That's
MIT,
what we
and Harvard.
Need to do. That's what we need to do. Do what Ronald Reagan did 60 years ago back at the University of California campus. Do what any responsible administrator would do, and stop this. To all this craziness. One of the best ways of describing it, it's one of a piece with defund the police. It's a movement. It's designed to undermine the foundations of the United States, the various hallowed institutions, and they're doing a very good job. And one of the institutions, unfortunately, that they may inadvertently harm the most is the Democratic Party, because I suspect that they're going to see a revisiting of the 1968 Democratic Convention in Chicago. And it's very appropriate that this year's convention is going to be there also, because they've invited this, they've brought it upon themselves, and it could visit itself upon nobody better than Joe Biden, who can't find the moral clarity to say this is wrong.
Yeah, and some of them are actually calling for that. Some of them have mentioned 1968. It's time to bring it back again. Let's run it back. Some of the real radicals. So you're exactly right. That can happen. Going back to the school part of this now, though, Pete, I mentioned your article in the National Review. At nationalreview.com, and you should always try to find Peter's articles there. This is from just a few days ago. You suggested there are eight actions there, eight bullet points. I don't know if you had eight in mind, but that's how many there are. Actions that should be taken as far as bringing this under control. Do you want to hit on a couple of those, or do you want me to read them, and then you can comment further?
You can read them. I've got a lot more, but go ahead and read them.
Some of them you've already hit. The first one, you said students who lead or participate in the chants exhorting violence or terrorism should be disciplined or, where warranted, expelled. So you've kind of already hit that part. That the State Department should require universities to immediately notify state of the names of foreign students who have engaged in violent or otherwise criminal behavior, and these students should have their visas revoked, and they should be forced to leave the country immediately. This is something, again, that I heard last week, and I think I have mentioned to you last week, Pete, that Elise Stefanik has put forth, but I haven't heard word one from leadership. I don't know if that's something that's being considered, if it's going to go into committee, what kind of rapid action they could take on this, but nobody's talking about it other than Stefanik.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate. I would have thought that, again, when you have Jim Jordan again on, press him on it and ask him to ask his buddies who have oversight authority over these things to do those things. I mean, we have hundreds of thousands of foreign students here. Many of the foreign students are among the radicals. They're the ones who are funding these, or they're leading these things, and they're in the United States of America as a privilege. They don't have a right to be here, and if they're engaged in that kind of conduct, revoke their visas, get their butts out of here.
Your third point, Pete, is the DOJ should investigate the funding of the violent protests, which a couple of callers already talked about this morning about this. You say particularly whether such funding comes from foreign countries. And, you know, that's a very, very loose term, funding. You know, does that mean whoever is buying the identical pup tents that these kids are all, perching themselves under on all of these lawns and quads and so on and so forth? Or are we talking about the George Soroses of the world? How does that funding look?
And then, all of the above, yes. Anybody who
I don't know how you track that, though. I don't even know
very
how you track
that. Very difficult to do. Yeah. That's why we pay the big bucks, Bob. That's why you're paying your tax dollars. That's what we expect from a competent federal government.
And you know what? I read another portion of an article earlier before you came on, Pete, too, speaking of the funding aspect. People who fund those who promote this stuff, I think, ought to be considered as well. And the article was about anybody who is donating money, and there are some individuals who are college professors on campuses like these who are sending money to Ilhan Omar and to Sharia Tlaib. And to Pramila Jayapal and these other Hamas squad members who are promoting all of this anti-Semitism on campuses, on campus, and promoting the River to the Sea, erasure of Israel.
Yeah, there should be a consequence for all these folks. There are no half measures here. You know, we constantly engage in this kind of equivocation. This is really horrendous and despicable what they're talking about. When they talk river to the sea, what that means is the annihilation of Israel. That's what it means, okay? That means you're expressing not just sympathy, but you want an expansion of what happened on October 7th.
Right.
We should not be tolerating this at any point. Look, we had people who had great moral authority going back centuries, but look, more recently, when Eisenhower did not dither around when there were racist governors who prevented blacks from attending schools. No, he sent in the National Guard and put an end to it. Eisenhower, who had gravitas, the leader of Western forces in World War II, you know, the supreme Allied commander and then the president. He didn't hesitate. He didn't equivocate like the cadaver in the White House. And I'd hate to be pejorative with respect to this stuff, but that man is acting as if he's a cadaver. This is reprehensible, and we should call it out as such. Then, in addition to using, you know, whatever authorities you've got with respect to the State Department, I think it's imperative that justice look at, you've already mentioned this, but investigate the funding. So much money is coming into the United States, and we have no idea where it's going or the purpose of it. It is very interesting, for example, and I'm going a little bit off the mark here.
That's all right.
But you've got the evidence, for example, of Biden with the huge sums of money that the University of Pennsylvania got from China, okay? This is something that's a recurring theme. Many of our institutions are being, for lack of a more sophisticated term, bought off by either our enemies or our competitors. That needs to be investigated. Are we America or are we not? And I think we have to say something similar to what apparently to many leftists is a pejorative, that is America first. America first. This is the consequence of putting America last. Our borders being overrun, our college institutions turning into open urinals. This is ridiculous. So I think we have to get our minds right, as, again, they would say in Cool Hand Luke, and take care of these situations. Our nation is at stake, and clearly the future of you know, the future generations are at stake. It is distressing beyond belief to think that the United States of America in 2024 would tolerate this kind of overt hatred and anti-Semitism. It's being championed at our so-called elite institutions by, let's be frank about it, morons.
Yeah, very well said. And a couple more of your points here, Pete, before we're done. You mentioned, of course, that federal funding should be withheld to these universities. Also funding from donors and alumni. You say alumni should follow the lead of Robert Kraft and other major donors and withhold or withdraw their donations until the schools adequately address anti-Semitism. That is certainly fair to ask. House Education and Workforce Committee should conduct an investigation into foreign funding, which we talked about foreign funding before, particularly you just mentioned China as well. And then you have the House Education and Workforce examining whether the DOE, Department of Education, is enforcing existing reporting requirements. And then the last one, mayors need to allow police to enforce the law. Now, in Columbia, obviously, it's a situation where they say, Eric Adams says, we can't go onto that campus. It's a private campus. We can't go on unless we're invited in or unless we know there is an imminent threat or of harm to someone. But, you know, they're not necessarily cooperating with police departments. Go ahead and take that.
Yeah, and first of all, that's only partially true. I hear that all the time. Most of them are simply making a policy determination, and it's true. Do they want to get involved in this kind of stuff? And there could be some prickly circumstances where their authority may not necessarily extend, so they've got to be careful about it. But this is not the time for... Now, this sounds too strident, but this isn't the time for half measures. It really isn't. I'm not advocating transgressing the law or anything like that, but err on the side of making sure that you've got peace and you're protecting the property and the people who are on campus. Most of the people on campus just want to take their exams, be done with it, but you've got a fairly sizable cohort that are preventing them from doing so. But again, I think aside from I mentioned lawsuits that I typically refrain from, but I think they could be effective. The most effective, I think, thing that they can do is not something that I bullet pointed in that article, but I mentioned it at the very end, and that is employers. Almost all of these students are going to school so they can eventually become employed. And if you're going to a Cornell or your Columbia or a Yale, you're hoping to get some major job at some big-time firm getting big, big, big bucks. Well, one of the most, something that'll get your attention right away is if employers lined up and said, we want to know everybody who's been participating in any kind of hateful demonstration against any group of individuals, any Americans whatsoever, engaged in any kind of violent conduct. We want to know who they are, because we're not employing them. Sorry, we don't want them anywhere near our institutions. You're going to have to find a job at Dairy Queen or someplace else like that. No disrespect to Dairy Queen, and people who work there perform fine jobs, but you generally don't get a degree from Columbia to the tune of several hundred thousand dollars in tuition fees and costs and everything else to work at Dairy Queen. But all those institutions to which they hope to go say, no way. Close the door right in their face. A lot of law firms have done just that. That gets their attention. You see these little cowards with their face masks on. They haven't put those on because of COVID. Their commitment to the Palestinian cause stops right where they can be identified.
That's
Make
exactly
sure you
right.
can. And we had a hearing at the Civil Rights Commission. Facial recognition software with AI can identify those bozos right away. Use it.
Yeah, that's it. Well, and of course you can't. If they're wearing the tablecloths around their heads and the masks over their faces, then you can't. And they know that, and that's exactly why they do it.
Yeah,
and I'll
here's
say
the
it
problem
again.
For them. Very often you can identify them even with that because of AI.
Wow, just the eyes, huh? Okay. Well, that's
yep.
if they can do it, that's great, because I agree with you. And by the way, you know, last part about this, it is simply it should be accepted as what it is. The presence of those tablecloth towels they wear around their heads and their necks, they're called keffiyehs or keffiyeh or whatever the heck it is. They just look like tablecloths to me. Those are the new swastikas. And everybody wearing a swastika should be called out and identified as such. That's the last thing, last word on it for now. Peter Kersenow, thank you, my friend. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Bob.
That's Kersenow. It's 10:58. We'll take a timeout. Always Right Radio on AM 14.
Bob. This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
All right, hour number three is underway at 8 minutes past 11 o'clock. Good Tuesday to you. It's the 30th morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024. The campus culture of, insanity, as I guess the only thing I can call it right now. There are really no terms, I think, that would do justice to what is going on right now as they continue open and wanton anti-Semitism all across the country. And we are talking about American students, we are talking about American professional agitators, and we are also talking about foreign-born students here on visas. They couldn't study in their own country, couldn't have the opportunity, so they came to this country, and now they come here calling for death to America. Somebody make that make sense to me. It's ongoing. It's being supported by a lot of very dangerous people, including people like Jamal Bowman. Jamal Bowman, you remember him? That's Captain Fire Alarm in the United States Congress. Representative Jamal Bowman did an interview recently and said, it's not enough for us to have terrorists sympathizing foreigners on our campus. We should bring the terrorists straight here from Gaza as well.
The United States bring in people from Gaza.
Well, we are a land of immigrants, and we are a land of asylum seekers. Anyone escaping persecution and oppression and violence the United States has always been an open home to those people. So whether they're coming from Palestine, Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, Mexico, Haiti.
What if they're not escaping persecution, oppression, and violence? What if they are the ones that are actually providing the persecution, the oppression, and the violence, the ones perpetrating it upon others? Because that's what the people from Gaza do. Those people are called Hamas. There is a reason why Egypt has Gaza blockaded so that no one can come from Gaza into Egypt, because they know that the Gazan people, which I'm going to reluctantly call Palestinians, even though it's not accurate, but the Gazan people may indeed include Hamas terrorists. Egypt knows better. And yet Jamal Bowman and the radical Democrats, who love our open border, they say, bring them on over. Bring the people from Gaza here. We already have their supporters here chanting death to Israel, death to America, intifada now, free, free Palestine, intimidating Jewish students. We already have those, their supporters here. Might as well bring the straight up terrorists from Gaza as well, right? Well, when you start talking about immigration, I start talking about FAIR, the Federation for American Immigration Reform. We're joined now by Ira Melman. He is the media director. He's been with FAIR since 1986. He's the media director for FAIR, joining us now on Always Right Radio. Ira, good to talk to you again. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Good morning.
You know, ostensibly, I brought you on to talk about an article that was on the FAIR website yesterday, which is a very good one by Joe Chatham about the parole in place backdoor amnesty. But I'd be remiss if I didn't get your thoughts on this statement and the call by some in the Democrat Party to bring Gazans directly to the United States as immigrants seeking protection from persecution.
Well, it is insane, but that seems to be the policy of the Democratic Party these days, that we just open our borders, we let anybody into the United States. How are we going to do any background checks on people who are coming from Gaza? At the best of times, it is controlled by a terrorist organization that aims to do us harm. Even if they actually knew who these people were and what their intents were, they wouldn't share that information with us. In fact, they would do everything in their power to cover it up. So the idea that we're simply going to take in lots of people from Gaza and relocate them here is just adding to the insanity that has been going on. You have Iran, which is the sponsor of most of these terrorist organizations. They're threatening us. We have a wide-open southern border. We've had 1.8 million people get into the country. We know they crossed the border, but they were never apprehended by the Border Patrol. They are roaming around this country. Obviously, not all of them pose a national security threat, but the Iranians and their proxies are not stupid. They understand what our vulnerabilities are. They have told us they aim to hit us. They're going to take advantage of any opportunity that we give them, and we are giving them plenty of opportunity. It's just a matter of time unless we wise up.
Yeah, well, and that's a very difficult term to define, wise up. We don't even have anybody leading from the top. I mean, Biden continues to declare, as it pertains to the border in general, that it's the Republicans' fault because there was a bipartisan bill sent from the Senate to the House and the House didn't take it up. This, of course, would be the one that allowed 1.825 million people across every year before, that would be 5,000 a week, before Biden could ever or would ever even lift a finger to do anything about it. But since they got their package now, they've even taken that off the table, Ira. They've, you know, when I mean the supplemental package of money going to secure the Ukrainian border, as well as assistance for Israel and Taiwan. But since they got their $95 billion now, there is no talk whatsoever, and the caravans are crossing at a faster rate now than ever before.
Right. There's no incentive for them. And by the way, that was a failure of the Republican leadership. They had said countless times that they were going to condition foreign aid. They were going to condition other things on having border security measures, real border security measures, not the fake ones that were in the Senate bill, but the kind that were passed last year by the House of Representatives in H.R. 2. They were going to insist on including those as part of the package, and each time they backed down. They backed down during the budget battle. They backed down when the continuing resolutions were passed. They backed down with the foreign aid package. So, you know, it's obviously the Biden administration has been leading here. And by the way, they know exactly what they're doing. It's not incompetence. This is the policy. It may be their most successful policy in an ironic way that, you know, it's undermining the security of the country, but this is exactly what they want. The Republicans can't seem to get their act together. They promise one thing, and then at, you know, the last minute they cave in. So here we are, we're stuck in the same position that we were 2 years ago, and something has got to change because it is getting more dangerous by the day.
It is that. We're talking with Ira Melman, the media director for FAIR. That's the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Let's talk now about this this backdoor amnesty discussion. It's parole in place that is being used to provide that amnesty to more than a million illegal aliens. What can you tell us about this?
Well, first of all, parole in place isn't a real thing. It's not statutorily enacted. There is a parole program that was set up in the early 1950s, and it was intended to be on a limited basis. It says on a case-by-case basis and for certain national security and humanitarian concerns. And it's supposed to be, you know, once you those conditions have been satisfied, you go home. And like any other limited power, what we have seen over the years is that it has been expanded by administration after administration. The parole in place idea came up during the Clinton administration. They decided not only did they have the authority to allow inadmissible aliens from outside the United States to come in under parole, but if there were illegal aliens here in this country, they could say, oh, you're already here, we're going to give you parole right here in the United States. And now the Biden administration is taking that and expanding it and saying that, you know, they're going to give it on a broad basis to whole classes of illegal aliens. I doubt they would do it before the election. They understand that the president's immigration policies are deeply unpopular with the American public. You know, 60 to 70% of the American people are opposed to the policies of this administration when it comes to border and immigration. But, you know, after the election, all bets are off. So, you know, we just have to make we have to hope that somebody is going to control the situation there. You know, once things are in place, yes, you know, there is the judicial process. Somebody's going to sue. It takes years and years and years to litigate this. In the meantime, they've established facts on the ground, and it's really hard to undo something, even if it was unconstitutional in the first place.
Well, that's a lot. And the Constitution doesn't seem to matter, it would seem, to a lot of these people. I'm glad you brought that up about being unconstitutional in the first place. I'm glad, because that just does not seem to matter to them, nor does safety nor security. And I'm just, again, I said this at the very, very beginning about where is President Biden on all of this. You know, they've completely just lost interest in this, despite the fact, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, because you guys study this all the time, is immigration and is the border still the number one issue for most Americans when it comes to this upcoming election?
It is, and precisely because it is having such an impact on the country. People see what's going on at the border. They understand the national security implications of it. They see it right there in their communities. You go to cities like New York or to Denver, Chicago, they're collapsing under the weight of all the people who are coming in. They've got to provide housing. They've got to provide all sorts of services. It's unsustainable, and it keeps going on and on. They keep trying to pass the buck. You know, they land in one jurisdiction. They try to ship them off to another jurisdiction. The real answer is for the administration to decide that it's going to force our borders, but they have shown no inclination of doing that. And so we just keep going through this cycle, and people are starting to feel it. They're feeling it in their communities. They're feeling it in their kids' schools. They're feeling it everywhere, and they're saying enough is enough.
Yeah, well, and as they should be. And, you know, even worse than just we talk oftentimes, Ira, about the cost in terms of, you know, resources. You know, every time we bring in another million of these people, they're going to be dispersed to various parts around the country who are going to have to house them, feed them, clothe them, provide medical services, educate them, and so on and so forth. But then there's the crime aspect. We are being gaslit, I think, by many in the current administration and many in the current party of power into believing that crime is actually on the decrease here, and it's because they have stopped prosecuting certain crimes that therefore they don't go on the records. The record, I should say. I was just talking to the president of the Crime Prevention Research Center, who was telling me that the crimes are not being reported as well. So they're taking the statistics and saying, "Look at that! Look at the fewer number of lower number of violent crimes reported, even though there are high profile ones that are absolutely specifically the result of our immigration policy because they're being committed by these illegals who are coming in, be being given amnesty, or not amnesty, but asylum, and being told, just go ahead and go wherever it is that you want in the country. We'll call you when it's time for your hearing. The crime rate is still through the roof when you actually consider all of it.
Right. And, you know, you take the case of Lake and Riley, that young woman, the nursing student who was murdered in Georgia a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. Her alleged murderer was paroled into the country. He came into the United States illegally. They gave him parole, allowed him to enter the country. He ended up settling in New York City. He was arrested for endangerment of a child in New York City. That is a serious offense. New York City released him without bail. They did not inform ICE that, hey, you know, we've got an illegal alien here who has been charged with a very serious crime. And by the way, under Alejandro Mayorkas, ICE probably wouldn't have asked to detain and remove him in any event. But they released him. He got out of New York City. He went down to Georgia. He joined his brother, who was living in Athens, Georgia, another illegal alien with a criminal record. He had a couple of DUIs on his record. And all of this led to, ultimately, to the murder of a young woman who's just out for a morning jog. And this happens over and over and over again. That's just, you know, one of the most glaring cases. But it happens every single day. People are victimized. And the government, the federal government, local governments, the sanctuary jurisdictions will do nothing about it. And, again, we're stuck with it. And you're right, you know, crime is not going down. It's just that people don't even bother reporting a lot of crimes because they know it's just a waste of time.
Do you support, or is it the position of FAIR? Do you have any position? I guess maybe is a better way to ask this, Ira. The revoking of student visas from students who are participating in the Death to America stuff on campus and the anti-Semitism?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we shouldn't have people here on visas. It's a privilege to come to the United States. When we issue you a visa, it is conditional on you obeying our laws and behaving yourself. And what we're seeing going on college campuses around the country is precisely the opposite. It is endangering, as you pointed out in the opening, it is endangering the well-being of American students on college campuses. Anybody who else who's trying to just get an education is affected by this, particularly Jewish students. And, you know, I say this as a father of a Jewish student. It is really difficult, and it's making life miserable for these kids.
Yeah, it really is. And like I said in my introduction, it galls me to hear people come to the United States, the place where, you know, they can't access opportunities, educational or otherwise, in their countries. They come to this one and then they condemn this one. And then they call for this one's destruction. And then they call for the destruction of our allies in Israel. And then they treat, you know, Jewish American students the way that they are. You know, the idea that they can come over here and try to impose they don't assimilate. They want nothing to do with American culture. They believe their culture is superior, but yet they escape their culture to come to this culture and then denigrate ours. It is just galling that there isn't more of a pushback on the congressional level at the, you know, in the United States, in Washington, D.C., to recognize that and to remedy that.
Yeah, look, I mean, we need reform top to bottom. But, you know, not the kind of reform that the Biden administration is pushing, which is essentially open borders and just giving amnesty to everybody. We need real reform that recognizes, first and foremost, that immigration policy is a public policy. Its primary objective is to serve the interests of the American people. We, the American people, are the primary constituency for U.S. immigration policy, and we ought to design and enforce our immigration policies accordingly.
I think that's a fair thing to ask. I don't think we're no pun intended with FAIR, but I think that's a reasonable request. Ira Melman, Media Director at FAIR. That's the Federation for American Immigration Reform. Make sure you follow them. Make sure you visit the website often. That's how I came across the quote-unquote, not official, but what it amounts to, a de facto parole-in-place policy, is go to fairus.org regularly. Bookmark it on your browser, fairus.org. Ira, thank you for the work that you guys continue to do. I appreciate you coming on.
My pleasure. Thanks. Thank you.
Good to talk to you, sir. Yeah, it's it is particularly aggravating, quite frankly, infuriating to me anyway, that these people see America as the great Satan. Not all of them, obviously. I'm talking about the ones who do, though. those who see America as the great Satan, that Israel should not have a place on the map. They're leaving their cave-dwelling habitats in some of these Middle Eastern desert countries to come to the United States to live it up, and then continue to decry the United States, to call us the great Satan, to say death to America, death to Israel, from the river to the sea. All of the nonsense that they do directly impacts us and directly impacts American citizens. You know, there are still a handful of American citizens, maybe alive, that have been held hostage. Are they over here saying free the hostages? Has anybody heard one of these tablecloth wearers on these college campuses chanting, free the hostages now, free the hostages now? If they're so concerned about the deaths in Gaza, why aren't they chanting, free the hostages now? Because that will lead to an end to the fighting. It won't be the complete end, but that'll be a huge step toward it. Free the hostages, all of them. Including the Americans. They're not chanting for that. They don't give a rip about the American hostages. They don't give a rip about America. They're here because it advances an agenda. And that is enough for me. It's 11:26. Quick timeout. We'll be back.
The Answer.
All right, it's 11:33. Final segment of the broadcast is underway. I still want to hear from moms and dads. I still want to know, going back now to the primary focus of the show today, I didn't even do a top 9 at 9 today because I wanted to do some extended commentary on what's going on the college campuses. It is incredible to me how close we are to seeing George Floyd-style riots breaking out across the country, but instead of in the inner cities, on the campuses in which your kids and mine are living. So I want to know, mom and dad, are you going to get your kids? I'm looking at pictures right now of the mobs. I'm looking at windows being smashed. I'm looking at doors being barricaded. I'm looking at tablecloth wearers joined by, you know, other mushhead students along with their paid activists and professional agitators, and I'm looking at them doing everything that they can to destroy campus buildings. This is going to be met at some point or another, I believe, with force. How can it not? Whether it's police, whether it's National Guard, that's a matter of question for the authorities in those various locations. But it's going to be met with force. Mom, dad, are you going to get your kid? Or if your kid has a car, are you telling them, hop in, throw as much as you can get in it right now, and get your butt out of there? Secondly, and I doubt anybody on this in this audience would find themselves in a position where their child is among the radicals and the I don't know what else to call them, I suppose, the extremists, the anti-Semitic hordes who are committing all of this damage, all of these activists. If your kid was one of them, however, and you see them on TV as a part of one of these protests, what are you doing? Are you on the phone with them trying to talk them out of it, or is that too late? Are you physically going to go there and drag them home? Are you going to cut off their cell phone access, cut off their bank cards, however it is that you used to fund them and give them their spending money? What are you going to do to get them out of there? This is going to be something we have to talk about tomorrow as well, because I don't have a ton of time left today. But this is something we're going to have to answer. What should parents do? Now, here's the truth. Sad to say, a lot of these parents are probably fist-bumping one another going, yeah, we raised ourselves a good little radical just like we were in the 60s. We were, you know, he's out there, or she's out there making a statement for free Palestine, and we support it. You know, Israel shouldn't exist anyway. The hell with the Jews. Maybe there's parents out there like that. In fact, not maybe. Many of them said, I asked this question when this whole thing started. Do you think that the radical students are showing up on these left-wing, particularly the Ivy Leagues, but not exclusively? Do you think they're showing up on these campuses already radicalized by mom and dad and their government school experiences? and it's just now taking it to the next level? Or are these innocent, wide-eyed kids showing up on campus who think that they're going to have a great experience but didn't realize they're walking into a full-on indoctrination-style cult, which is what so many of these campuses have devolved into? They're literally creating cults. I don't know which it is, but I'm sure there are a lot of people who sent their kids away, who raised them in good, family values-driven households, you know, loving the country, loving their opportunity with great goals in mind, and then show up on college campus, and by the time Thanksgiving comes around of their freshman year, the kids come home and want nothing to do with mom and dad. They call them liars, tell them that everything they told them has been wrong, and that, you know, they've been completely turned away from their family, which is what classical Marxists do. That's what division is all about. So those parents, the ones who sent their kids all pie-eyed and, wow, look around, I'm going to school away from home for the first time, and then they lose them. Then they lose them. Is there any hope of getting them back? Because I'll tell you something, and I can't speak with a, you know, from a position of strength here, because both of my kids are in college, and I don't regret that, because they're different circumstances. Every kid is different. Every circumstance is different. Every professional goal is different. Some kids have a goal in mind. They know exactly what it takes. They have to get a degree in X, Y, and Z. And in my daughter's case, another degree after that, because this is the way it's done. Okay. You know, in another, whatever your kid's situation is different. But if your kid is not particularly goal driven, when they're 18 and they're graduating high school and they're not quite sure what they want to do with their lives, do not just send them to college and say, you'll figure it out when you get there. Because that's the next thing to do, is to go to college. It puts off, it delays adulting for 4 more years, because you're going to lose your kids. You're going to lose your kids on campuses like this if you're not very, very careful, and sometimes just very, very lucky, you can lose your kids. Lisa Woods in Medina. Lisa, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Bob. Thanks good for morning. Taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind today?
I wake up with a grateful heart every morning now, and I thank God for, you know, all our blessings. And unfortunately, that's not what these angry students are taught anymore. You're right. We let the colleges and the public schools teach them, and it's not the right lessons in life. So I wanted to give out a shout out to all the leaders that are out there, past and present, and you and Peter. Wow, did Peter do an incredible job at McFann. I'm sure there's some of the listeners today that heard Peter. It was intense. It was incredible. It was incredible.
I believe it.
But
he always is.
It was amazing. But yeah, I wanted to stay focused on what your message was today, and I'm just grateful that I'm not in that place where one of my kids are in one of these colleges. I have 5 children, and they're all in different places, and I'm very grateful that I don't have to make that call or make that decision. And I really appreciated what Peter had to say about the his kids and that, how strong they are as well.
Yeah, and I'm grateful too, and I mean literally grateful to God. I thank God that I don't find myself in that situation. Like I said, I ask my kids every day, anything going on your campuses, anything going on that you've seen down there, any reason to be concerned? And I know them, they'll tell me the truth. They absolutely always have, that there is something going on, but they happen to go to 2 universities where there are not, they have not had any such, you know, uprisings or even hints of protests that are going to be causing any problems of any kind whatsoever. So I count myself as grateful, which is why I sit here and I'm trying to offer some support and some empathy, and they really ask and pick the minds of parents whose kids might be in a different place, you know, where they do find themselves in situations like this. Because when that powder keg explodes, which it looks like it's on the verge of doing in a number of these different places, I don't want my kid to be around to be a part of the wreckage.
No. And, you know, I know people, even my own age, that were indoctrinated, and it's like they have this weird time-released, delayed, indoctrinated hate and anger, and they're in a weird place, and I just feel sorry for them. I really do. And the people, like you said, of all ages, parents have kids that 20s, 30s, 40s, and more, that are no longer in touch with their parents because they call them racist and all sorts of other things. They have driven that wedge so deep. It's real. It's true. And I just encourage everybody to encourage their kids, their grandkids, or their neighbors' kids. You know, homeschool, do what you can. Keep them out of these darn indoctrination camps. Yeah. It's all we can do to keep our country.
I totally agree. You got it, Lisa. Yeah. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. And I'm glad you had a great event with Peter last Saturday. Appreciate that very much. And Pete, of course, did a great job this morning with us, too. I'll address a little bit of what Lisa just said here, too, as we get ready to close. The government-run schools, otherwise known as public schools. I've been telling you about NEOCA, well, since I found out that NEOCA was going to be developed here in Northeast Ohio. There are a few dozen what they're called as Barney Charter Schools that are Hillsdale curriculum-driven. Around the country and around the Midwest. There's a handful of them here in the state of Ohio. And when I found out one was going to be coming to Northeast Ohio, and this one's going to be in Copley, which is pretty good location because it draws people from Akron. It's going to draw families from, you know, Medina, from Brunswick, from Cleveland, because it's like 22 minutes from one, 27 minutes from another. It's a pretty good location to get people from all around the area. And it is the answer, like I said, to the question of if we can't put our kids in the government-run schools without losing them and having them radicalized, quite frankly, not to mention not very well educated in terms of, you know, achievement from these schools, because they're more focused on teaching kids, you know, how to be socially social justice warriors and how to, you know, choose new pronouns than to actually understand grammar. And you know what I mean? That men can become pregnant rather than teaching them about actual human biology, things that they're supposed to learn. So if you know, I can't put my kids in that, and I can't afford to put them in a parochial school because it's expensive. And even the parochial schools, so many of them have gone woke and they're doing the same things as the government schools. And you're looking for that other option. I'm just going to continue to hammer this home. Classical academies, that's the way in the Northeast Ohio Classical Academy.